ass. Shock wire. I call it that because if you take a shower and you touch the wire, you die.
Get on your feet. Stand up and take some action. Get on your feet. Stand up and take some action.
Hello. And welcome to another episode of Dome and Bedlam, the first place Seattle Mariner Lookout Landing podcast. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. My name is Nathan Bishop. I am joined today by the same two knuckleheads that always join me every week. David Skiba, how art thou?
You know, it is good to be alive.
It is. It's a very nice day outside.
That's how I am.
Yes. I got that first place mentality. Scott Weber, what's going on with you?
It's adequate to be alive.
It's fine.
It's fine. I don't mind it.
It's okay.
It's 75% good.
We're above dashboard confessional level, which is about as good as you can ask.
Can you get above dashboard? Is there a way?
Can you get below it?
Are we talking now? What era dashboard? Are we talking places you have come to fear the most dashboard?
We are only talking places you've come to fear the most.
Okay, because that's the only good one.
Do they have another song?
They have like 12 albums.
Oh, I know.
And by they, I mean him.
Yeah, it's one dude just doing.
Listen to Further Seems Forever. They're better.
Damn. Hot take right at the beginning.
Hot take.
Just cutting the emo gods out of the knees. Let's start it off with some booze today. Are you gentlemen consuming alcohol during this fine podcast?
Mm-hmm.
And what would your choices be?
So I am I'm actually working on the pale ale from a local brewery.
Oh, what is that brewed with?
It is let's see, we threw some Simcoe, or they threw some Simcoe in this beer.
good cover.
Really lifted the veil there.
Cascade, mostly two roll pale on the gray malt, a little Crystal 135 for all the home brewing nerds who I definitely know listen to us, because that's our. Definitely, you know, that's the
key demo.
Actually,
key
I would bet you that baseball and homebrewing have a really strong crossover in a very real way.
Yeah, both take about 3.5 hours.
Yeah, and involve a lot of standing around and drinking.
And other people think that they're very boring.
Yes.
And the people who like them talk about it way too much.
Which is why we're here. And now we've come full circle. How's the beer tasting?
It's a wonderful. I actually have to say... For the local brewery purchased a couple jockey boxes for those not in the know. Mm-hmm. Those are
things you
just
keep
kind of
the horse riders in, right?
Yeah, that's how you win the Triple Crown.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they're actually
jockey
really...
boxers. Jockey boxers.
Jockey boxers. Okay. So jockey boxes are awesome.
For
and
filtering?
They're a little more expensive. No, actually, it's for serving beer.
Whoa.
I recommend them for someone who's willing to step their party game up like 3 levels.
Ooh.
A little bit of an investment. However, what you're buying is you're essentially buying a cooler that on the interior has a really big coil, and on the exterior has a spout, and on the other side of the cooler has a hookup for a keg. So what you do is you fill the cooler with ice where the coil is, and the keg connects into the cooler. The beer goes around the coil, which is usually like a really long distance, so the beer gets cold inside, and then you literally just have a pour spout on the front side of the cooler, and you're serving draft beer at like 32 degrees.
This sounds like the kind of thing that like baseball players would spend 20 grand on fill it with like Coors Light.
And the other spout's Kool-Aid, so they can do shandies.
Yeah, and drink with their fried chicken during the games.
Summer shandy, Bud Heavy with a little... I don't know.
Yeah, that's America heavy.
Speaking of Coors Light, what are you drinking, Scott?
Dude, I hate to disappoint, but I'm not drinking a thing.
Por qué no?
I went to the game yesterday, got after it pretty good, and I'm going to the game tomorrow and expect to do the same. So we're breaking it up.
Because you're a responsible adult.
I am.
Very much so. I respect that. I am struggling with a cold, which comes from having children, which no one should have under any circumstances. So tonight, as I've done in the past, I'm sipping on a straight rye whiskey, which is clearing out my sinuses nicely. It's from Bend, Oregon, which is known for their beer, but the rye is just fine.
But the whiskey works too.
Yep. It'll get you drunk. It's like the Sam Jackson skit, Sam Jackson beer. Dudes, the Mariners are, I think we ended last week saying we would be happy if they had won. They went 4-3 and came back for our next
20.
Yeah, with 20 wins. Yeah. And thanks to them completely pulling a game out of their ass yesterday, they have 21 wins. They're 21-13. I don't think that Texas played today, so they're still a game and a half up in the West. They are right there in the conversation for the best record in the AL. They have the best relief bullpen ERA in the American. It goes on and on. It's been ridiculous. Crazy. It's an absurd week.
And Steve Johnson is on the roster.
And getting high leverage outs in extra.
So were those EFISes, or is that just how he throws?
I think that is not technically an EFIS because it was max effort curveball.
Incredible. 63?
Yeah. When I was writing the recap yesterday, which I did in a big hurry, but I went back and looked, and that guy threw an inning and two thirds, and he had five at bats with the winning run in scoring position, and the who the hell did they beat? The Rays went 0-5, including, as we just mentioned, him throwing 64-mile-an-hour curveballs down the middle of the plate.
That literally, I mean, like at the apex of the break, they were so slow that it looked like the ball decided where to drop.
Yes. Like, it was right in that nebulous area between breaking pitch and EFIS. And
and knuckleball.
Yeah, but with rotation.
Yeah.
And so this is, I mean, we can talk about this in a second, too. The bullpen's just so thin right now. Oh, but, like, it just, we're still way too early to say this is a different team. This is a different kind of season. But, like, that's the kind of win. More than coming out and kicking someone's ass. You've got a baseball season's full of those, like, could go either way kind of games. And that is the kind of game that, like, the Mariners lose that game all the time. Right?
Like, yeah, it's happening so much that it feels like it's going to stop changing, but I've kind of forgotten what normal is.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, equilibrium's just totally been flipped upside down.
Well, they had two games in the Rays series that were the ones that's like any team from the last 15 years loses this game.
That was the one on Monday.
Monday, I think, was the one where they gave the lead back and then promptly took it right back.
I'm sure we won. Because we swept them, but I can't remember it.
It's true.
I recapped too many games this week to distinguish.
Yeah, so they're 21-13. This is going, and this is kind of a thing that we need to talk about too. I mean, their playoff odds are at close to 72% per BP, which admittedly is, I think, the most bullish projection on their playoff odds. We don't think, like, right now they're on pace for 100 wins. This team is not going to win 100 games. I'll just go out there and say that right now. They're not winning 100 games. I'd be shocked. Personally, I'd be very surprised if they won 90. But that shit doesn't matter. So if they play 500 ball the rest of the way, they're an 86-win team.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Like, this is the kind of stretch that you need. Not only that, the rest, it's May 12th. They're about to go on a road trip where they admittedly have a tough series against Baltimore.
Yep.
Then three games against the Reds. And then two games and then two games against the Padres. And that's between that road trip and now, they're playing three games against the Angels, who very well could be the worst team in the American League.
Well, and that's what we talked about with
not
May
worse
was,
than the Twins.
Yeah, the Twins are ugly right now.
The Twins are what, 8-25 or something? They're worse than the Braves.
Exactly
now.
That. No. They're the worst team in baseball.
No.
Yeah. It happened very quietly.
Yeah.
Well, everybody assumes they got contracted a while back, right? 8-25.
Oh, and I called the Twins to win the Central.
And for the Mariners to win the West, so you're 1-2.
It's true.
Hey, if all the takes are hot, some of them are going to be a little chilly.
Some of them are going to, I mean, not everything gets in the soup.
Okay, let me ask you this question, though. here's what I'd like to ask you. The Twins are 8-25. The Angels are 13-20. But the Angels have had a shitload of players go on the disabled list. So right now, what is the worst roster in the American League? Angels minus Andrelton Simmons minus
Brendan Ryan in 2016 is your starting shortstop.
Minus Skaggs and shit, who's their great firearming right? Garrett Richards just went out for the year. It's basically Albert Pujols, Cole Hamill, Mike Trout, and the worst farm system anyone has ever seen. Right?
Well, I mean, now that we competed our best or turned our best prospect into
a reliever,
maybe we can join them soon. Sorry, I don't mean to go out of agenda on that one. I'm still
the thing about the Angels is it's really bad. And, you know, on current record, the Twins are worse. But the Twins, at least, you know, the forecast for the Twins, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road is so much better.
I mean, that's kind of the old game, right? Like you play the game where like you roll out the roster or the starting lineups and you play the matchup game. Would I trade my first baseman for that team's first baseman, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I feel like you're probably going to end up taking more Twins in that game right now than you are the Angels, because that is a bleak ass situation.
Well, yeah, the Twins still have Miguel Sano. They have Byron Buxton. They have some
rejuvenated Mauer.
Yes, help on the way. And maybe one of these days they'll start giving Kim everyday at bats. They're still kind of dinking around with him.
Such a weird signing.
Oh, sorry, not Kim, Park. It's because we were talking about all the Korean players before.
Mina.
That's coming later.
Damn it.
We're destroying all kinds of magic in this first segment. We know who a local brewery is. We know we're recording segments out of order. Shit.
Sorry.
It's all right. The Wizard of the
weird thing about you.
I'm not drinking. My equilibrium is off.
the Twins. So I went to college in Minnesota, and the 2009 season was that season where it looked like the Twins were about to just go 5 years of just dynasty. And then they re-signed Mauer to that contract. And I was looking at the payroll back then, and this was 2009, and I told one of my buddies, I was like, you guys just gave up a quarter of your contract to a catcher. Like, there's no way this works out for you.
He's a generational talent, too. I mean, they had to keep him, but like...
And he was hometown. He was hometown. Like, there's no way they could have let Joe Mauer leave.
Nope. They had to keep him. And
yep,
they did, and it's bit them in the ass. Although I love that guy. I love watching him hit.
Yes.
I'm so glad he seems to be getting his health back. It sounds like he's going to bat leadoff for the rest of the year. And you know, the contract blows. But he's still, when he's right, there's not a much prettier swing in baseball.
We're talking about Marty Cordova, right?
I thought it was Kent Herbeck, no?
I thought that was Betancourt.
Can I buy a vowel, Kent Herbeck?
Okay, so let's circle back around to from the shittiest team in baseball. I know we're used to talking about the shittiest team in baseball,
because it's
usually ours. But let's talk about the Mariners again. I kind of wanted to talk, like, I have this on our agenda here. It says, is this luck and does that matter? Like, I think we kind of just touched on that. There is definitely a part of this that's luck, but at the end of the day, like, are we kind of all just on the same page that like this isn't going to continue at the current rate, but you know, it's happened this far and that might be enough.
But here's Scott, you go.
Yeah. I think a lot of this feels like luck, and that's what we talked about earlier. But like, if you really look at this team's numbers and what they're doing, there's no mathematical reason that should say that this team is like super lucky. They still have a BABIP that's in the lower half of the league. Their run differential is plus 30-something. It's among the best in the American League. Like, overall performances don't feel like it's a fluky result at all. I think it's just these little things like yesterday where, they had every opportunity against a garbage, you know, reliever arm just coming in, picked up off the trash heap and filling innings and extra innings. And they're not scoring any runs. It just feels like that in the past was something that they would always concede on. So, again, I don't know what's normal. Yeah. And, you know, this early in the season, we're all judging things based on feel with those kind of, like, close one-run games. And so you just don't have the sample to make anything conclusive. So, I don't know, man. It's weird. I guess I feel like I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. It feels lucky, but only because I'm not used to it.
I think and I totally agree with you there, Scott. I agree that a lot of the luck feel is that the Mariners have not done this forever. And what I'll point to is by WRC Plus right now, the Seattle Mariners are the sixth best club in baseball.
Third of the American League. I'm on the same page.
Yeah. And the BABIP is, 40 points lower than anyone else above them? So there's a ton of room for expansion growth in that offense. And I think, you know, I don't think we expect the bullpen to be number one in the AL for the entire year. But it's going to get healthier with theoretically better talent. And I expect the offense, honestly, to produce more than its current rate.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really exciting to me is when you look at the three major components of this team offense, position player, starting pitcher, and relief pitcher, it's pretty clear that the worst segment there is relief pitching. And they just talent-wise, like just quality of player. And they've managed to survive that by, like, I mean, whether that's luck or it's great coaching or it's, whatever it is, they've managed to get through that. And the bullpen talent level is about to go up, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. they don't need this luck to hold in that particular avenue to hold. They're going to get Benoit back. Sounds like they might get Furbush back sooner rather than later. And then
Scrib and Cook sound further off.
Yeah, those two sound like they're gone for a while. But, you know, those two by themselves – it sounds like Zick will be out for maybe another month or so. Once they get those three guys back, they're not going to need as much luck to get through the bullpen. And I totally agree on the offense. They have a 109 WRC plus. It sounds weird. If there's one part of this team right now that I think is just
underperforming,
that I don't worry about at all, it's this offense, which is crazy. Yeah. We're Mariners fans.
Have 47 bombs.
and a WRC plus team wide of 109. I mean, they're.
And that's underperforming.
It's crazy. It's crazy. With a low BABIP. I mean, they're crushing home runs, and nothing about that has felt fluky to me. And I don't expect it to be fluky. I mean, you know, like one guy starts to slump, and Ketel Marte goes insane. Leonis Martin will start hitting home runs, even though it's just the offense, I think, might be for real. If there's one thing I feel like may just be here all year long, I think this team may just like be a pain in the ass to try to get out.
Oh, for sure. They'll score four runs a game.
Offensively, it looks good. I think I'm on the bullpen is troublesome thing, but hopefully the support comes just in time for Peralta to melt down, you know, because Peralta's not this good. No. And he's one of the reasons why this feels so lucky is that you got him for nothing. And he hasn't been a quality reliever in several years. So for him to take over with Benoit out and really fill in that role has just been amazing. But that's what, if I'm looking at one guy on this team where I'm like, I don't think so, it's probably Peralta.
But is it possible that he, you know, found a rejuvenation in his stuff? Because the book's out on him. What,
dude,
he has
it's
12 any, major league seasons.
I will not disbelieve anything when it comes to relievers.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you just have a good year. Sometimes it just happens because I don't know. And I don't understand happens. Relievers. They're very confusing.
Oh, yeah. The opposite certainly happens. Well, Tom Wilhelmsen.
Or Fernando Rodney last year. I'll tell you
or
one.
Fernando Rodney this year.
We're talking about Peralta being basically just living on pixie dust. The absolute opposite of that for me the thing that's the most exciting about this bullpen is that Steve Cishek is touching 94 again. And just guys do not look comfortable taking hacks up against that guy right now. He looks close to the 2011 to 2014 guy that he was when he was one of the better closers in the National League. And that contract looked kind of bad when we signed it. Didn't make a lot of sense. And they have him under contract through next year at a really affordable price. And if this is who he is now, man, it's such a comforting thing to know when we get to the ninth. You know, it's not quite Aroldis Chapman or Craig Kimbrell or just one of the elite lockdown guys, but you feel really good about the guy's chance to get three outs with a lead at the ninth inning.
And Cishek almost makes Peralta better. Peralta has such a conventional release. He's so over the top. He's short arming, and then everyone knows it's 1-2. It's the fastball and the split. Mm-hmm. But then you get Cishek coming in the ninth, and it's like, the change of angle matters so much. Mm-hmm. And that off speed he's throwing, that's just like it's like a frisbee that just sits in front of you and then dips a little. It's
Jeff Nelson like reincarnated 85. Is what it looks like.
It is. It's insane.
Yeah. It's really, really dirty. And then
his ability to work the bottom of the zone is just incredible to me. I mean, I cannot remember the last reliever that I saw in the Mariners that could so consistently get balls that are called strikes. At the bottom of the zone.
Knees. Yep.
Like right at the knees and dipping down at the knees.
It's and you know, and sync. We saw that with that four out save where he can lose that release point. He can lose the bottom of the zone, and that's the thing you worry about with three-quarter release and submarine guys, is if they lose the release point, it's gone quick. Uh-huh. But he found it back.
Yep. Yeah, he's been a really, really exciting thing. And another exciting thing, we mentioned him a little bit ago, but David, this is kind of one of your horses coming into the preseason, but fuck, Ketel Marte against the Rays, you guys. Oh, or just the last week to 10 days. I mean, just like you've seen the best case scenario of Ketel Marte. Of what he can be. Was it Monday? Was that the game where he went 4 for 5?
That was the game he went off.
That's
almost
right.
Hit the cycle.
That was Felix.
Yep.
Hit his first home run. And but you know, it hasn't just been this series. It's been a couple weeks now. I can't remember where it was on the road trip where he had that game where he was making plays all over the field defensively. I think maybe it was the first game back in Houston, but I might be misremembering that.
He had a couple really good picks with the A's series too.
Yeah, and we had another one of our writers. That's where it was. It was in Oakland. And we had another one of our writers, Brendan, who we've had on the podcast before. He and I were chatting about Marte, and we were kind of looking at his numbers and just watching him play and realizing that, you know, the big thing when he came up at the end of last year was like, holy shit, his walk rate is so much higher than we're used to it being. And that was like, if there was one thing, is like, man, that's not going to stick. And it hasn't.
No, it hasn't.
Last year, his walk rate was 9.7% in 247 plate appearances, way above his minor league levels. Now this year, it's 3.7%, which is much more in line with what we expected. But the exciting thing is even though he's running a high BABIP, you look at his season line and it's like, yeah, that's about what I expect. His WRC plus is 101. His batting average is 294. He's slugging close to 400. He's playing, you know, league average-ish defense at shortstop. Yeah. He can run. Like, this guy looks like not necessarily a superstar or a star, but like the kind of guy that a winning baseball team can have. And to produce that at age 22 on league minimum, I'm pretty close to being ecstatic.
Yeah.
It's great. He's in a lot of ways, he's kind of the anti-Brad Miller, which is funny because he is a guy that's going to give more expected results, whereas Brad Miller, obviously, I thought that he could be a star at some point, and I think still has that upside somewhere in him because of the power. Marte doesn't have that, but the consistency is just what's really impressive to me, I think, avoiding the sophomore slump. I mean, yeah, walks are down, but whatever. Like, the overall line is about what you would pray and hope for.
And what I'll say about and Nathan, you pretty much touched on it, so this is kind of wrapping up. No, it's good, but wrapping up Ketel here is, I mean, pretty much through a half season, which is what we have PA's plate appearances wise for him in his career.
Yep.
A little above, you know, it's a little above. He's sort of a four-win shortstop.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
he's at 22.
Yeah, he's on track right now to be worth about 2.5 to 3 if his levels hold right now. And a lot of that is his, you know, I mean, I don't know how we rate his defense on, you know, WARs or whatever, but you know, what I see is more the offensive stat line there coupled with what my eyes tell me, which is that this guy is not. He's not Andrelton Simmons. He's not one of the elite defensive shortstops in the game, but he's a guy that can get through there. And his athleticism lets him make a lot of really good plays, even though he's going to, you know, he doesn't necessarily look as polished or as elite as some other guys. And, you know, a league average-ish bat with a league average-ish glove, that's
at short.
That's
huge.
That's not something to be upset about at all.
No.
If his ceiling is 2 to 2.5 wins going forward for the next 5 to 6 years, this team is in better shape than they've been a shortstop since A-Rod, by far.
Of course. And I don't think you can call that his ceiling, because that's just what we've seen so far.
That's not what I meant. His floor is 2 to 2.5. If that's what if he's going to go up.
Cautious about floors. It's still,
of course. It's early in his career. Very early.
It is. I mean, he's got under 400 career plate appearances. So
what I really believe in when it comes to Ketel Marte is that he will, for as long as he needs it, have the tutelage of Robinson Cano.
Yeah. He seems to be in a really good situation with Cano and Cruz. Did you guys see I heard an interview with him with Shannon Dreyer, I think last week, and he was given audio and they were saying, and she was asking him, you know, what are you trying to do when you get up to the bat? And he goes, oh, you know, he's a pretty thickly accented guy. Yep. And he's just like, you know, listen to Edgar and Cano, and you try to take a good swing and put the good part of the bat on the ball, you know, all that standard cliche stuff. And she goes, yeah. And occasionally take a walk. Right. And there's like a full second pause and it just, yeah.
And I don't need him to walk. I don't care about it.
I mean, I care. It'd be great if he was running a 9.7% walk rate. It's not going to be who he is. It's just
that's why I don't need him to think about it.
Yeah,
Forget about it, man.
You can hate him for it and just say this is the thing he's not good at. Not walking is just like not being good at anything else in baseball.
Dude, at 22, who wants to walk?
It's like Brandon Phillips. You guys remember a couple years ago, Brandon Phillips, someone like mentioned his low on base percentage, yeah, and he's like, whatever, walks don't matter. If you get enough hits, your on base percentage will be high. It's not wrong.
Let's wrap this up and get ready for our next segment, in which we're going to be joined by Mina Kimes, Seattle sports fan, ESPN, the magazine, national writer. Do you guys have any last things before we break for Mina?
No.
No.
Toss it over.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with Mina Kimes. Welcome back. Today we are joined by a very special guest. She is ESPN senior magazine writer, freshly award-laden, Mina Kimes is joining us today. Mina, how are you?
Good. It's a beautiful day in New York today.
Every day is a beautiful day in New York, I'm told.
Not quite. just took Lenny for a long walk, listened to some highlights from the game last night, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it was another win. And your background, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about this because, you know, we have a lot of football and baseball crossover fandom out here, but it's not universal. Yeah. And your background is writing about football with a focus towards the Seahawks, but you also grew up out here. Is that correct? So you're kind of a Seattle sports fan all around.
Yeah, so I don't really folk write about the Seahawks, actually, and I actually didn't grow up out there either. So
nailed it.
So really quick, I'm sort of from all over. My dad was in the military, but he's from Seattle, and my mom's Korean. So Seattle's really the only place I would consistently go back to growing up, and we always went there in the summers and at Christmas. And I got to go to a ton of Mariners games as a kid because with my grandparents, we'd go back every summer. So I was a M's fan from a really young age and didn't start writing about sports until a couple of years ago when I joined ESPN. So I write features and columns, but I actually pretty much typically don't write about Seattle sports. I talk about it sometimes, but I've never covered a game or anything like that.
You know what? And I apologize for completely being incorrect. It's pretty on brand for us, honestly, to be totally wrong. So it fits.
The lack of research is something. It's an angle we're pursuing.
We're seeing what happens if you never know what you're talking about.
It's like letting the listeners join you as you learn new information. It's like Serial, really.
It really is. We're almost as popular.
Hopefully season one of Serial.
You know,
Serial, what does this guest do for a living? We'll find out.
You know what made me think of that, though, is when I remember the first time that you really caught my eye was a few years ago when you wrote about your connection to your father and that being strengthened through the Seahawks. And I'm sure you know the piece that I'm talking about, back in their Super Bowl run. So that's why I kind of got confused, because you actually did write about the Seahawks that time.
Yes, and I've written a little bit about it. I'm being an asshole. I have.
That's fine. That's also on brand.
That's also very on brand.
Cool.
So, yes, Seahawks are my love. But, you know, I was a huge M's fan until I kind of stopped paying attention around, like, 2006, maybe. I want to say second.
Yeah.
Pretty good timing. The second Hargrove year, maybe. It was like after Felix's first season. Is that 2006?
Yep.
Am I right?
Got it. He came up late 2005. So at the risk of dating any of us, Did you grow up going to the Kingdom or to...
I did, okay. Yes. No, my early, yeah, Kingdom.
We're not
games.
Asking your exact age, but we're just trying
yeah,
to get
I'm
it
30, yeah. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. Skiba's 17.
Yeah, it's yeah, true. So. David's shocked.
I can't wait to graduate high school.
So talk to me about... So there's obviously, at least from my understanding, 3,000 miles away and far from being in touch with the culture of the highfalutin capital of culture, which is New York. But there's a pretty thriving Seahawks fan base out there, from what I can tell, as somebody who also kind of follows the team. Have you seen with the team, with the Mariners starting to, you know, get exciting and really kind of track, mm-hmm. and with Robinson Cano out there, are you starting to see maybe a little bit of crossover out there?
I don't think Cano is helping the crossover aspect very much. But, yeah, you know, there's Mariners fans everywhere. And I think it's because they were so good in the 90s yeah. that, like, children yeah. of that era. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the Cowboys mm. or how there are just some teams that were good when we were kids. And so people stayed fans, even if they're not necessarily from there. So, you know, you always see Mariners fans everywhere you go. It's not like the Seahawks quite yet, where suddenly there's a lot of fans sure, in yeah. New York. And like suddenly there are Seahawks bars where there never were before. So it's certainly not at that level. But I definitely have seen more Mariners caps in the neighborhood, I've got to say. And, you know, you do a little nod, a little sure. wink, you know, a little recognition. I like that.
Yeah.
I've always felt like the Mariners sort of got that Boy Meets World kind of grace. Like, you know, you go back and you watch the early seasons of Boy Meets World, and it's like, man, they were really missing a lot. But then, you know, 98, oh, shit, when did that show start?
Before you were born, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Mid-90s, yeah.
Yeah, right around the like group years.
They got the groove. Yeah.
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 And then 2001, things really shut down.
Everybody
the
got
the Boy Meets World, though. Yeah.
Everybody got too old. Scott, did you have a question for Mina? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. No, I was just trying to think of a good Topanga reference to make there. How Topanga is the Seattle Mariners of the mid-90s. And we all look back on that with nostalgia.
And she kind of yeah. she kind of bottomed down in the mid-aughts, didn't she?
The whole show. Yeah, I mean, the cast went down.
Isn't there like a new one? Like
Girl Meets World?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It
was like a big deal because they were back on the first episode. And then they're like, they're back. Right?
Oh, Corey. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sean didn't come back, though. It was pretty controversial.
Yeah.
Me and my friends
talked about it.
Didn't Sean, like, overdose? Ryder Strong?
No.
No? Okay.
Wait.
No, please.
I'm totally lost.
Somebody jump on the internet right now.
I am.
On it.
Ryder Strong.
He's alive. Still alive.
He's
Everybody
alive.
Relax.
We're good. Sorry. We're good.
I think I was confusing him with Jonathan Brandis. From the client.
Yes, from Sequest.
Sequest?
I'm all
he
over
did
that
die.
Who did
no.
die?
Yeah, died in 2003. Okay. Yep. This took a dark turn.
It really did. Well, we're talking Mariners.
Yes, Mariners. So things from the 90s that turned out to be disappointing.
It happens. Yeah, but this looks like this could be... I mean, I think we're kind of starting to feel like we're on the... I've felt for a long time, you can correct me if you would disagree with this, you sounds like you have a fairly global perspective, but I felt like the fan base was kind of a sleeping giant already, partially because of that Griffey effect, which I think is a good term for what you were referencing earlier, just that,
yeah.
that super visible worldwide star that carries a brand the way that only a superstar athlete can. And we're in Seattle, we're in this you know, tech-savvy area, and it's just felt like as soon as this team can start to get good, it's just going to explode. And I really think that I don't think it could possibly be the Seahawks because the MLB is just not the NFL for a variety
yeah.
of reasons. But if this team holds on and they've got visible, likable stars in Cano and Felix, a couple other guys, I think you're going to see a little – I think the Mariners will start to gain traction as a real national thing.
I think, yeah, I mean, compared to the 90s, though, one big change, and not to get businessy or whatever, but is that there are sort of aren't national stars or teams anymore, right? Baseball's become so much more localized
yes,
since
yeah.
then. Like, even guys we think of as huge stars like Bryce Harper or Chris Bryant sure. aren't really that famous in the way that a Ken Griffey Jr. was. So, you know, there I think are some natural limits, but I'm sure in Seattle, it's going to get crazy. I don't know if it already is, if Mariner mania has taken off. I haven't been back this summer, but I'd be curious to know.
I wouldn't say it's gained traction yet.
It's,
we're getting there.
It's
getting there?
Yeah. 34 games doesn't undo 15 years.
No. Are people like same old Mariners? That's still the refrain?
I think everyone's just waiting for it to not be true. And then at some point, people are going to have to realize that it is true. And then they'll still be in denial for a bit longer after that.
Fan enthusiasm is a lagging effect, just like attendance, I would say. You know,
I'm expecting an August ETA for the
city to really get excited.
Well, part of what's been really cool is we've had an unseasonably nice spring. And the home weekend series, there's been 30 to 40,000 at almost every weekend game, which is really unusual for them this early in the year. Typically because we're freezing our ass off in like 50 degree weather and the team's losing by 8 runs. But that hasn't been the case. So attendance is starting to trickle up. How do you follow the team? Do you like the games start at like 2 a.m. or some shit where you live? Do you like stay up and watch this, or do you just like kind of track it on your phone as you're going to bed? I know New York never sleeps, but I assume you do. So what's that experience like?
I watch some of the games, the earlier ones and the weekend games. If Felix is pitching, I'll usually try to watch. You know, I have this single game package, so
okay.
I'll tune in on. Yeah. And then for the late ones, I'll just kind of track it on my phone. I was thinking, like, I remember the beginning of last year, there were so many mornings where I'd fall asleep and they'd be ahead, or we honestly usually tied, and then just that feeling of waking up to utter disappointment, like the first thing you see is like, you know, in like the ninth inning or something. So, you know, it's definitely not. Actually, now I get to wake up and have a pleasant surprise. It's quite nice.
Us too. I go to
like
sleep.
Like Christmas morning.
Yeah, I go to sleep and it's just like, holy shit, we won again. It's totally.
Yeah,
it's weird.
It doesn't feel real yet.
Learning to be successful. I was talking to my brother the other day and trying to explain how that, you know, trying to convince him to get back in it. And I was saying, it's kind of like, I don't know if you guys have ever had the experience where you're dating someone who's much better looking than you, you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I've only had that experience.
I'm 11 years deep into that one right now.
Scott is a notorious, he's a good...
Well, you know, the 2016 Mariners, they could dump you at any second. Enjoy the ride while it lasts.
Treasure every single day with that beautiful person on your hip, right? Well, let's get down to the important stuff. We had a question. You are an avid dog enthusiast. Would that be an accurate descriptor?
I think it's pretty accurate.
You own one dog?
Just one. I don't like to use the word own. He's my lifelong partner. But yeah,
That's
his name is Lenny.
Okay. And he's what breed?
He's a mix of Beagle, Chihuahua, some other question marks thrown in there. He's about 20 pounds, very intelligent, very articulate, great personality.
Okay, so if you...
Big sports fan.
Is he getting into baseball at all?
Oh, he loves baseball.
Very cool. You don't make him suffer in Yankee Stadium, do you? That place sucks.
I really wish I could take him to bark at the park. I always see the pictures every year. I'm so envious of the Mariners' dogs.
It'd be a blast.
Just bring my dog across the country specifically to go. It sounds like something I do, actually.
You
could walk him around the moat at Yankee.
Yeah, there you go. Ugh. They probably don't allow dogs unless you...
Not that I know. I don't think they have a similar event.
That sounds too fun and fan-friendly for them.
Typical.
Yeah.
Typical.
So we have the question on Twitter, and I was kind of wondering if we could riff on this for a little while about what kind of dog would various Mariners be? And I've been trying to think about this for a while, and I'm trying to think if there's any ones that are obvious. And I thought like an easy one would be Deho Lee, because he's kind of a St. Bernard, isn't he?
Ooh.
Oh. Huh.
Am I off there? I would not claim near the dog knowledge that other people have.
Well, Cano is like a golden retriever, or like, you know, some kind of like beautiful dog that just makes it look easy when they run around the dog park and very athletic.
But golden retrievers are kind of overly earnest for Cano, aren't
That's
they?
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Because Cano is just cool as shit.
Kyle Seeger is a beagle.
Yeah, I have no problem with that at all. What are other ones?
What's like the most dad-like?
Aoki is a corgi.
he absolutely is.
I want to preface this by saying it's not... there's no racial connotation to what I'm about to say, but I think Deho Lee's a chow.
Huh.
Oh.
Just
because they're like, they're large and they're, you know...
Okay.
Such a sweet affect and
kind of
so much power.
Very, pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always feel like chows look kind of proud because they're, you know, their back end kind of sticks up and the tail kind of twirls up like, hey, I'm like kind of a peacock dog.
Both look great in sunglasses, yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally into that. That works. I wish we still had Brad Miller. We could have found a great one for Brad Miller.
Oh, God.
What dog just screws up at the worst possible time and just shits
like
the
bed? Blue heeler?
Which one? Yeah, like you just having company over and he's just like, oh, God, you just crapped all over the rug.
And he ate through the wall.
But the rest of the time, he's amazing. He's like the best dog. But it's just
never like this.
Yeah, I swear to God. Poor Brad. What's Felix? What is like the magisterial, the ultimate magisterial?
See, that for Felix for me was the golden retriever because of the loyalty aspect.
I'd go lab for Felix over golden.
Lab.
Yeah, because goldens are just, they're dumb.
They are very dumb dogs.
Yeah, they're like all American jock dogs.
Yeah.
Felix, man.
It's a tough one.
I don't know
if
there's, yeah, that is a tough one. Maybe like a French bulldog.
That's pretty.
Is that too random?
I don't know. No, I think
French bulldogs are always sick. So maybe Gutierrez should be the.
Scott, be nice.
Oh, poor Goody.
Poor Goody.
They're lovable dogs.
Yeah, I do.
They're cute.
Goody. Do you have? I'm sorry, we're getting sidetracked from the dog thing. But do you have like kind of a B-side favorite Mariner, like outside of the easy ones like Felix and
like current roster?
Yeah.
I mean, is Goody B-list? He's not really, right? He's such a fan favorite. Will you take him?
Yeah,
okay.
He's not a national name,
Oh, maybe Paxton?
Yes!
Oh, there it is.
Wait,
speaking of, how did we miss him in the dog talk?
Seriously.
Oh, my God.
What's the one? What's the droop?
Like a bloodhound, yeah. Yes,
exactly.
Right. The saddest eyes. he's doing great, right? What's the latest on him?
He's been really good. Yeah, he started the season rough, and we kind of freaked out, I think, yesterday because he got pulled in the second inning. But I guess with this forward-thinking front office, this is just, they're saying one start a month. We're just taking him out after an inning because we're going to limit his innings for the long haul this year because it's very clear that they're already thinking, they want
about him cracking the rotation.
Yeah, they want to maximize this window. Uh-huh. And if, like, I mean, we've kind of hypothesized that he could even pitch some relief.
Pennant.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they're hedging for injury a bit, just looking at the five people who are currently your starters.
You always need rotation depth. I mean, it's so rare that you get the same five pitching every single time throughout the entire year. The Mariners had it once, and that team sucked. So
yeah,
it's just not that common at all. So, David, would you have anything from Mina?
Oh, I was going to ask about her favorite B-side too. So
we
missed on that, but I mean, I did see a Pokemon tweet, and I was wondering, Mariners is Pokemon?
Mariners is Pokemon? I don't know anything.
Really overcommitted to this one on Twitter, by the way.
The Pokemon thing? I know. I was like, okay, I have 10 minutes to kill. Send me a request and I'll tell you what Pokemon you are. And it was like my Twitter froze.
Oh, no.
So many people wanted to know. I don't want to do. Okay, Felix is very obviously Charizard.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Like, no question. Yeah, that's easy. Kuma is Pikachu.
Ooh. Is Kano Blastoise?
Blastoise is more like Nelson Cruz, I feel like.
Okay.
Yeah, or maybe he's like one of the big buff ones, like Machoke.
Like, Machamp.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. Believe it or not, I'm not regularly using them in conversation.
It's strange that I'm not either.
Yeah.
I know nothing about Pokemon, so I'm completely sitting this one out. You guys,
you have kids.
I know they like them, but I don't really listen to what they tell me, so it's fine. Mina, can I? So I'm going to shift away from the Pokemon. I'm sorry unless you guys wanted to keep going with that.
It's okay.
Please.
Okay. So you'd mentioned your mom's Korean. She was born in Korea, correct?
Yes, my mom was actually born in North Korea.
And,
escaped at a very young age, around the time of the Korean War. So she grew up in South Korea, though, and I have a lot of family over there.
So do you have you in the past, like, followed the Korean Baseball League? You were just in Korea earlier this year, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to a game or anything, or can you describe what that experience is like?
So I've been to games in Japan, but I've actually never... I've watched KBO games, but I've never been to one. I'm hoping to have that experience soon. So, I didn't know who Dae-ho Lee was, even though he seems to be quite legendary in Korea.
We didn't either. That was kind of my question, was whether had you heard of him before he came over here.
When we picked him up, I was texting with my friend who works in baseball, and I was saying, oh man, that's a big boy. I didn't know his nickname was Big Boy. So I was really excited. It's really cool though. My mom has gotten really into it as a result and actually just bought MLB at bat and like just watch. Yeah, no, Koreans are really, they take a lot of pride when, you know, a player makes it overseas. And sure. I remember when Chan Ho Park as a kid, it was such a big deal. And when I was in Korea earlier, the stars in the U.S., like Shin Soo Choo and Hyunjin Ryu, like there's posters are everywhere in Korea. I mean, they endorse everything. You see their like billboards. So I got to think this is going to make Daeho huge in Korea.
Oh, absolutely. And from my understanding, he already kind of is.
Yeah. And I wonder what the feel will be like in Seattle from that following internationally.
Like, I think it's going to be awesome. I mean, at Yankee Stadium when Tanaka pitches, that you see tons of Japanese people. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's such a cool phenomena, you know, when you sort of internationalize the game at home.
For sure. And what I've seen of those ballpark cultures, especially in the KBO, the games are so raucous. It just looks so fun.
I know. We could use a little bit of that in the U.S., I think.
Strongly agree. Yeah.
Nina, can you talk about what the experience was like seeing a baseball game in Japan comparatively?
Because sure.
I've always wanted to do.
So we went to the Yomiuri Giants, who are kind of like the Yankees of Japan, and also were embroiled at the time in a huge gambling scandal where I think like half wow. their pitchers were caught gambling, not on their team, but and they have a player coach or player manager who's like 40, who's a legend. So that was kind of cool because I saw his jersey. I can't remember his name, but everybody was wearing his jersey. And so one thing that it was a dome, too. They play in the Tokyo Dome, which is a domed stadium, which was a really interesting experience. The one thing I remember is more than anything, there were a lot more like organized activities, like people singing pre-planned songs or like there was a huge trumpet section where
Wow.
And like flags and stuff.
Almost like soccer, right? Kind of a soccer
vibe. Yeah,
sounds
like soccer.
Yeah, a lot like soccer. What happened in the U.S.? Why don't we have any of that? It's so crazy.
Well, soccer fans in the United States call each other lads.
See, when the Puritans got off the boat on Plymouth Rock.
They took away immediately their vuvuzelas.
They couldn't find the right wood to make them.
Yeah, I'm totally with... I think all of us there that baseball as a fan, and that's kind of been the cool thing of the King's Court. I don't know if you,
yeah, I mean, no, definitely. It is cool. What's like that in baseball? You know what I mean? It's such a cool phenomenon.
Yeah. And the Mariners were kind of the first team to do that.
Yeah.
And, it's the closest thing I think we have. Although I firmly believe, and you know, there's this weird thing in Seattle where, you know, we're definitely at like the backlash of the backlash of the backlash of the hashtag 12 movement. Like, it's just gotten so big and all consuming. But I love it. I think it's great. And I love the idea of the unification of a fan base and the energy that can bring. And I've said, and we've kind of agreed, that if the Mariners make the playoffs and have a home game at Safeco Field, we're just going to bring that mentality straight to baseball. And we're going to sell out that stadium, and it's going to be all yellow for Felix. And it's just going to, I think it's really going to be much more kind of like that Japanese baseball, football kind of crowd than we're used to seeing in baseball. I think it's going to be awesome. Like, I think baseball could kill it with that, by encouraging that kind of thing and being a little more forward thinking. Not their forte traditionally.
Yeah. It's always crazy for me when I go back to Seattle. It's like we were saying earlier, sometimes I see Mariners hats or Seahawks hats in New York, and when you're traveling, you see someone, you do a little, you know, hat tip or sometimes a high five or go Hawks. And then when I come to Seattle, I always want to be like, yeah, what's up, man? But like, that's so stupid. Like, everybody's wearing them. So it always takes me like an hour to realize, oh, wait, like a lot of people here are wearing Russell Wilson jerseys. Like, this is not a special moment at all.
No, we're it's an interesting time culturally out here as a sports fan. We were definitely not, we had no experience with winning, as you know, very well.
Yeah.
So we've had to deal with that.
I was going to say, I got out of it in 2006, and I got kind of back into it in 2013, okay. I think, and then really back into it in 2014. And then I watched almost every game I could that season. So since then, I've been back on the train.
Do you have any
specifically in 13 brought you back?
You know, I think that was about when I was becoming a sports writer. So I was like, oh, okay, this is a occupational thing that I have an excuse. You have only so much time. And I used to just watch, you know, 12 hours of football a week for fun. Now I can
sure.
sort of justify it a little. But that was, you know, rough times. I like to think I bought low again.
It's the key to good business, from my understanding.
May it be said of us all.
Yeah. Mina, do you have any plans to come out and to Seattle this summer and try to catch a game, or is that kind of up in the air for you right now?
I have a couple of football-related stories that might be bringing me out. I've been thinking to myself, like, oh, what happens with the playoffs? You know, what am I going to do? I have a friend who's getting married in October. And, you know, when you don't want to jinx it by even thinking about it.
Doing vacation plans right now too, and I'm just like, oh, I cannot go on vacation in October. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Oh, but then you're fucking it up, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Way to go, Scott.
Now we know. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of stories, you told us that you have a story to tell about a certain former executive of the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. Speaking of stories, no, it's okay. So. Like I said, I got back into it around 2013, and then 2014, I was kind of really paying attention again. So I knew who Jack Z was and knew his record and what he looked like and all that. So, and again, the context for this is that I'm not a beat reporter or writer, so I can kind of be a fan on the internet, I think, in a way that beat reporters and writers can't do as much, for ESPN. So anyways, all this is just backstory. So I was in Cleveland, not Seattle, and I was writing a story about a Cleveland sports convention, like of Cleveland sports fans. It was like the saddest story in the world.
God. Damn.
Yeah, it was really, really depressing.
You were the new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark.
So anyways, I was kind of walking around downtown Cleveland for a day, and
even darker.
I like it. I like Cleveland. Anyways, and I love that stadium. I was walking near it, and I checked into my hotel. I was staying downtown, and I didn't even occur to me that the Mariners were in town playing. And this was 2014, and they had just made the trade for the outfielder. He ended up sucking.
Oh, Austin Jackson. I know him well. Yeah. He did suck.
You know him well.
He did suck.
So it was August, it looks like, right? Yeah. Or no, when did we trade
for
him?
Yeah, right at the beginning
of August. Deadline
day. Yeah, deadline deal.
Yeah.
And then we got two players, I want to say. It was a three-team. No, I'm sorry. It was
just Austin Jackson.
Yeah, the end of July. Nick Franklin, right? He of the weird elbow tattoos. Yeah. And, okay, it's all kinds of
spider, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, like, maybe means he was in a gang. I don't know.
He's just
so anyways,
from Florida. That's all.
He just means he's from Florida.
Google spider elbow tattoo, guys, and you might
go
down a dark. So,
I already Googled Boy Meets World. We already have the thread ready.
That's how you get to Cleveland.com.
Anyways, at the time, it seemed like a pretty good trade.
Yeah, it was a good trade. I agree.
Yeah. So, hey, whatever. I was checking in the hotel for this other story, and this guy in front of me, bigger guy, Hawaiian shirt, bald, and I'm like, is that fucking Jack Sarancic? So I kind of look at his luggage, I'm trying to see, and I see like a little Mariners tag, and I'm like, okay, I'm in Cleveland, the Mariners are playing, there's this guy who looks like an older version of Stone Cold Steve Austin standing in front of me, and he has like a little Mariners tag, you know, it's, you can see the like numbers swirling in my head, I'm like, this has to be Jack Sarancic. So he checks in, and then I see his face, and I know it's definitely him. So I follow him to the elevator. Oh, I check in really quickly, and he's kind of feeling this stuff, and he goes to the elevator, and I'm like, I gotta follow him. This is my chance. Chance to do what? I don't know. So he's got all his luggage, and he's in the elevator, and I'm like, hold the door. And I say, like, should I say I work for ESPN? What do I want out of this interaction? Like, a conversation? Do I just want to? So I'm like, we're kind of just standing there in silence. And I go, hey, man, nice trade. It's not even over. So he's like, thank you. He looks very pleased with himself. And I realize, and then suddenly he's going to the basement, you know, to get his car or something. And he realizes that I haven't punched a number. Oh, and he looks at me and like this expression of utter fear. And I'm like, Jack Sarancic thinks I'm about to attack him. And he runs out of the elevator as soon as it opens. Because it was like, this woman followed me in. She followed me to the basement. She didn't punch a number. And then she weirdly referenced that she knows who I am.
Yeah, just like zero forethought in how you were going to try to make him feel comfortable.
So the conclusion is that he thinks Sai tried to kill him.
And yeah, you haunted him and he didn't sleep well. And that's why he made the Wellington Castillo for Mark Trumbo trade. And we can all trace it back now.
You ruined his time in Cleveland.
He was having a glorious time.
I know, but yeah, what a creepy experience if somebody was just like, hey, man.
Hey, nice trade.
Like a super creepy voice. Didn't introduce themselves. Didn't say I'm a Mariners fan. Didn't say I was.
Wow.
They just followed you to the basement. Anyways.
I love it.
That's my Jack story.
I love it. Hey,
It starts well with the, the hold the door, which is very, romantic,
yeah,
right?
Like it's very casual.
Sold the door.
It's also how murders happen.
Yeah, exactly. Mina, I we were really quick before we get off. I wanted to plug for you. I'm sure you know who Shannon Dreyer is, who she writes about the M's. She just published an awesome story on Deho Lee today that I would, I don't know if you saw it. I wanted to make sure. Okay, cool. That is
It reminds me a lot of my mom's story, actually. I just sent it to her because my mom was also raised by her grandparents. And I've been to Busan, yeah. So I sent it to her. She's really excited. She's kind of gathering any information on him she can. I mean, I'll defer to you guys here. Do you think it's going to hold up? I mean, is his swing improving? Oh, that was kind of the question mark before the season. I mean, it's obviously a small sample size, but should we be optimistic?
Well, he's not going to keep it. Over half of his fly balls are not going to keep going out of the ballpark. But I think what you're seeing, the thing that stood out to me is with that giant, first of all, he's not young. Secondly, he's not thin. And so my question was going to be, is he going to be able to catch up to a major league fastball without just kind of starting to swing before it even gets started? And what's been impressive to me has been his ability to catch up to fastballs while still kind of controlling, to use the Jerry DePoto term, controlling the zone, his ability to lay off of low breaking balls while still having the bat speed to catch up to a fastball. So the skill set looks fine. I don't think he's going to hit 30 home runs, but for a part-time first baseman who's surprisingly nimble, my neighbor has started calling him Poe because she thinks that he's the Kung Fu Panda. He moves better than you'd think he would. It's just, it looks great. Yeah. I think he's a really solid contributor.
And given Lynn's struggles, do you think there's a chance they get him in the mix more or keep the same platoon?
We talked about this last week.
It's
a good time to revisit after what's actually happened. I think what I said last week is that at the very least, you can stop removing him the second another right-hander comes in, and you can just let him complete his starts instead of putting Lynn in, who's been so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, Lind is tough because he has such a strong track record for the last 3 years of mashing right-handed pitchers that, you can't think that he turned into, 2006 Richie Sexson overnight. But this is the Mariners, and that's where players go to do that. So, at this
Let me ask you guys one more question then, since please. I have questions for you
take
now.
Take control.
Who do you think's the strongest candidate to regress upwards on the team?
Currently?
Yes. Who do you think we'll be feeling better about in a month?
I mean, I think you'd have to put Adam Lind in there.
Yeah, I would agree.
If you're not going to do Lind, I'd say still Kyle Seager has a lot of good regressing that he can do.
Yeah, but he's on the right trajectory now, right?
He is, yeah. He's trending upward. He's stopped hitting line drives every time at an opposing player. So, and he's figured out that if you just hit it over the fence,
so
much easier than putting.
I think Kuma could maybe be thrown in there just because he's been a little scary, but I hope he regresses positively.
So that one's more of a dream as opposed to what we're saying.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah.
You guys, any last things for Mina before we let her I don't know. Is it? They don't
enjoy New York.
It's not brunch time in New York. I don't know how brunch works.
It's always brunch time in New York.
That's my understanding. I have kids. I don't get that.
There's a Monte Cristo somewhere to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else, guys?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to talk to you guys. And go Biz, right?
That's what we say. And Mina, just in case anybody doesn't know, your Twitter handle is just your name. Is that correct?
It's just Mina Kimes.
Just that Mina Kimes. We're super grateful for your time, Mina. Thanks so much for joining
us.
Me. Yeah, next time you're out in Seattle, let's grab a beer and catch a game and we'll
yes. team.
Awesome.
Goms.
Goms.
All right, bye guys.
All right.
Goms. Bye. Handsome little fox, let me sing you folks a yarn. Hey, diddle dee da.
yaddle da duddle do doodle dum. Was a splendid little fella, fella wit and grace and charm. Say zippy zee zappy za yappy yo doodle gum. Well, like any little critter needing victuals for his midlands, well, he stole and he cheated and he lied just to survive.
Our thanks to Mina. We're really, really fortunate that so many actual, certified, worthwhile members of the media and the Mariners and sports agree to actually be debased by talking to us on this silly little podcast. We are back for our quick closing segment in which we answer your ridiculous Twitter questions. We thank you all for those. David, did the people come through for us this week?
They absolutely did. Thank you all so much for your questions. We have like almost we have too many to pick from, frankly.
Yes.
So
get into it.
Yeah, let's get right into it. We have let's just do a really quick hitter to warm up here. So over under where Mariners offense currently ranks in WRC plus, knowing that they currently rank in sixth, and I'm assuming this person means at the end of the year.
We'll just make it mean whatever we want it to mean.
What Benjamin Kasperson means, which is not a spice, Benjamin Kasperson at Ben the Analyst.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Shit, okay. Ben, you want to write
pretty
for
bold.
You want to write for Lookout Landing?
He wants to know if we think that the Mariners end over or under sixth in WRC plus end of the year.
In the American League? Or
No, that's overall in the MLB.
In the league.
Under. Six is high, really high.
I want to look at the list again. I mean, I'm inclined to agree too. Like six is like, we kind of think of as elite. If you're in the top five in anything, like you're elite in that one thing.
They're currently sixth.
The idea of the Mariners having an elite, borderline elite offense is still not something that I'm comfortable saying for 2016. I think that
they'll say top 10. I'll be fine with top 10 just because because of the park adjustment. WRC plus the park adjustment helps the Mariners so much.
Yeah.
It really does, because if you go to WOBA, they're 12th.
That's about what that offense feels like to me.
Yeah.
Like I actually think they're probably somewhere between where WRC plus and WOBA has them.
I agree.
So like Are we all going to be boring and agree here that we think that they're going to?
You know what? I'll say I'll go over. If they click on all cylinders, if the offense clicks on all cylinders for, let's call it 2 months of the year, I think they could end in fifth.
Well, yes, that's an if and they could, but it's a prediction.
Sure. Which is part of predicting.
They bust out that needle that's in Pulp Fiction and jam it into Adam Lynn's chest.
Yep. Yeah.
He bursts
I'm alive.
He starts doing the dance with Travolta.
If Adam Lynn starts dancing, our WRC plus is going to be above six.
I want Travolta in that scene in Pulp Fiction doing that dance with Travolta. That'd be good. I like that dance. That's the only dance I know how to do. Do we have other questions?
We have more.
Okay. Let's do
another one. The next comes in from Zach with a CH.
So not our Zach.
Well, no, he's also a CH.
Are we talking about fantasy team names?
We have a question from Zach. I'm going to go with Gebal, but it's G-E-B-A-L-L-E.
If it was French, it would just be
Gebal.
Gebal. So Zach Gebal says...
You can find Zach at Z Gebal.
Is it probably Gebaye or something like that?
It might be Gebaye, but there's no accent anywhere, which doesn't help me. Anyway, he asks
us. As three Anglo-Saxon white dudes are totally the definitive source of information on this.
I'm just saying it doesn't help. Which semi-obscure Mariner from this team are you most looking forward to remembering fondly?
I should leave that one off, shouldn't I? Because
You should.
Like right now, it's almost everybody because the team's been winning and they're all just so fun right now. I'm trying to think of someone that just really stands out to me as super fun. The stories that Shannon, when we had Shannon Dreher on with us about Wade Miley, I fucking love Wade Miley, man. That guy is just a dude, and seeing him bounce back and like the pace that he pitches with, I just, as a as somebody crazy. Who often has to recap games that start at 7:10 p.m.
and go 4 hours.
And that story about him sitting down next to Iwakuma and just like yelling for the interpreter. Hey, I want to talk to Kuma. So where are you from?
Japan crazy.
Want to shoot some shit?
All right. Why did he become a vaudeville auctioneer?
Hey, now.
Wait, extra, extra.
You want a strike? Who wants a strike?
Roosevelt goes to war.
I do a really bad Southern accent.
Here's the trouble I have with obscure. Does that mean they're off the team by 2017?
Well, yeah, see, that's why I say Daeho Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on a 1-year deal. He's easily been the most fun part about this entire season. When we're 10 years from now, he's going to be the piece that I associate with this year. Now, I don't know if he'll be back or not, but that's an obvious answer for me.
He is so damn
fun. That's a good call.
God, I love that guy. His back control with that crazy ass swing and leg kick is just unbelievable to me. It's his physique.
Being he's a big boy.
I just don't know how he does it, man. He just
now. We have him for 1 or 2 more seasons.
I mean, we have him. I think for as many years as we.
Oh no, I'm talking about my obscure.
Oh,
Mariner.
Oh no, Daeho.
Daeho's one year.
I believe Daeho's contract meets that he will be granted free agency after this year.
Oh, yes. Okay, so this is a special deal.
Yeah.
For me, mine is Seth.
It's becoming
Smith.
The standard in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The prove it year to get into the league.
That. I should know that. Go ahead, Seth Smith.
Yeah. So I think you know it's tough for me to pick an obscure Mariner because I'm not exactly sure if Seth Smith fits the category because the contract is long enough that I don't know if you know he'll be necessarily forgotten.
He's not an A-list star.
Exactly.
It works.
And the way he plays baseball, while very meaningful and impactful, is relatively forgettable.
I gotta hit again. So, whatever.
I'm thinking he might fall into obscurity in 10 years or so, but I as everyone I'm sure who follows the site knows, I absolutely love Seth Smith, so I think he's mine.
Is he the most bland Mariner of the past 5 years? Like,
have you heard a Chris Iannetta interview?
It's true.
5 years.
But at least he has like that quirky, like, hey, I own a winery. Maybe I'm super Bobby fun D, if you get a couple drinks.
Jack.
Yeah. I know Vernon Wells. He's an artist.
I think David Ardsma might be the least personable Mariner of the last
several
years.
He kind of tried, though, didn't he?
I mean, he was a closer, so he had to do something because they made him do interviews.
Yeah. I remember an Instagram picture or something of some crap of him, like, holding the, like, he had gone to Bungie and they had given him, like, an actual Halo gun and he was running around like an idiot with it. But that's my only memory of him. Whatever. I don't know. So,
cool.
Yeah, Seth Smith, man. What else do we, let's do a couple more and then we'll wrap
up. Couple more,
up
sure.
Go about their business.
This is, this is a pretty easy one here from Dane Conroy, Conrow.
Mm-hmm.
You can find him at Dane Conroy. Not a verified account, so I can't be sure if it's not the real Dane Conroy.
Maybe it's Daeho Lee.
His question to us is, should fans be worried that hashtag GoBiz is only 1.5 games up on the Rangers despite the hot start?
Scott, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I think this early in the season, you're not, you shouldn't be scoreboard watching. I know it's fun too, and you love when the Rangers lose, but like, just take care of your own business and worry about everyone else later. If the Mariners win enough games, it's not going to matter. Texas will not stay hot forever. The Mariners won't stay hot forever. It's a long, long race. I'm not looking at that right now. I'm looking at a team that's 8 games over .500 when they were very much not expected to do that, and I'm thrilled. Like, even if they were in second place, I'd be like, don't worry about it.
Oh, for sure.
And I still feel like one of the things that people were pointing at that kind of inspires that question, I think, is that the Mariners haven't played some of the teams that the Astros and the Rangers have been playing recently, like the Red Sox and the White Sox and, you know, some of the better teams in the American League. But that's still like you were just saying, Scott, like this early in the season, that's still so fluid. Like, what does it mean to be one of the best teams in the American League right now? You know, that doesn't mean you're one of the best teams in the American League. Sadly, as much as we'd love to think that with the way that the Mariners look. So, you know, I don't put a lot of stock into strength of schedule, like especially in 34 games, the Mariners have played a pretty weak strength of schedule in part because they beat the shit out of people over the last 26 games, which tends to make your strength of schedule look a lot weaker because you've handed out a whole lot of losses to your opponents.
Yeah.
So A game and a half.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean,
I think the second piece of that question that's unasked that I think is worth us talking about is the AL West already on the 12th of May a two-horse race?
I don't think so.
No.
I think it's a three-horse race.
Think the Astros come back up?
Yeah, I do.
I do. I think it's a question if they will. Right now, I'd put it at 2.5 because the Astros have the talent to do it, but they just got their brains beat in with their ace again in Boston today. And if their rotation doesn't get it together, but they're screwed. Like if Keuchel, Fister, McHugh, they're going to get McCullers back. Yeah. I think tomorrow.
It has to turn around now or like in a month, and they're still at this level. They're done.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Like they're close.
Right.
Well, and I've been saying it for, going on 3 years now, and it's looked bad for the last 2 years, but I just have never believed in Keuchel and McHugh.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems to be falling apart, but who knows? They might find what they've had, the magic they've had for the last 2 years.
They were losing 110 games in 2013. You're like, they're shit. And they're like, yeah, we know. And it was 2014, yeah, we know. They were losing 95. You're like, they're shit. They're like, yeah, we still know. And then 2015, they're shit. Nope, fuck you. And then
nope, gotcha.
2016, you just quadrupled down, and you're looking gold, baby.
Hey, that's how you win blackjack.
Let it ride.
You just got to keep believing. You hit on 16.
That is the gambling advice that we want to ride with. Just don't stop gambling.
Don't stop. You either hit 16 all night, or you don't hit 16 all night.
And you always, always hold on a soft 12.
Just whatever happens, don't go away from the table. That's the most important thing.
If you leave the table, you'll lose. You can't win if you aren't at the table.
You got to give yourself some upside.
Find your ceiling. Gambling. Find your ceiling. Hashtag Viva Las Vegas.
Look out.
Yeah.
That's their new slogan.
Hashtag Big Fish Casino.
The darkest timeline.
Oh my God. I can't.
What kind of path sends you down to the place where you are starring in a Big Fish Casino commercial?
I'm live brainstorming this on the podcast. We should totally write an article where we seek out like go find look the leaderboards of Big Fish and go like find them in real life and just get to know them a little bit. That'd be a spectacular lookout landing article. We should have Patrick do it.
Patrick is well suited.
Patrick's
for it.
Probably one of them.
Patrick has spent many real life money on virtual currency at the Big Fish Casino. He's drank many virtual bottles of port while playing blackjack.
That's true. Let's do one last question and then call it a day.
Yeah. So the last one comes from SJW, which who knows the name of that person?
Scott Jamil
Weber.
Walker.
Weber. I know that boy. Oh shit, is this you, Scott?
And you can reach Scott Jamil Walker at C-Town 51, the number 51.
Is he a Randy Johnson or an Ichiro?
But the letter C. Number 51, but the letter C.
No, he spells it like the body of water.
Okay.
And he is asking, do you believe, barring injury, that we have any 200 innings starters in the current staff?
I'm not sure what that means, barring like if everybody stays healthy, yeah.
If everyone stays healthy, and that's kind of,
Yes.
They should all, barring health?
You've got guys like...
I guess he's asking, is anyone going to fan out based on being bad?
Well, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, have they talked about putting Walker on an innings limit this year? It seems unlikely at this point.
I believe he is definitely not on one this
year. They're definitely letting his pitching out get higher. The one guy I would say, if you want the best bet to not reach 200 innings, would be Nate Karns, just because he suffered, forearm concerns at the end of last year. He's never done it before. Him and Walker are the two where you'd be like, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Also, I guess Kuma, too. I mean, honestly.
I guess...
The one I feel the best about is Wade Miley, because he's done it year after year after year.
Sure. Yeah. Allow me to rephrase the question.
Okay, keep
for him.
Keep assuming what you think our questioners mean.
Yes.
I like it.
I believe what he's getting at is, barring injury, let's assume none of the current five get an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Will all of them pitch the entire season? Or will one of them be, have to come out because they suck so bad, yada, yada?
As it stands now,
it's no, but it's baseball. I don't see any way that we can answer that question.
Let me ask a more interesting question. because oof, I'm going
to
call
it. That's very rude to see 10-50.
Bold.
Well, it's, I mean, I think I understand what he means, but I'm just going to ask it in a way that I think is easier to give a better answer. So over-under starts for James Paxton this year as a Seattle ooh, Mariner.
Great question.
6.5.
Man, I was going to say 7.
Yeah, it's probably, I'll say over. Stuff happens.
Yeah.
I'll say over.
Yeah.
I think Puma does not last the year. Or
has a break in the middle or something like that.
Yeah.
I could see, like I just said, the only one that I feel good about is Wade Miley, because that's his entire, he's basically like poor man's Mark Burley. He's going to throw 200 innings. That's his thing.
Are we still thinking Ty is hitting above his weight right now? Or is this what Ty Walker is?
Well, what do we mean? Do we mean the Ty Walker that struck out 9 and 5 innings yesterday, or the one that gave up a grand slam in the sixth and completely lost it?
Not a bad pitch. Not a bad pitch.
No. That entire start, Ty Walker? Because entire start was great to me.
Yeah, but he's also going to be he's still going to be tested in the ways that he was in the sixth, where he has an ump that's not giving him the strikes he thinks that he wants, and he's going to have to. I mean, that's the thing that like. We don't know how to quantify this yet, but that's been the thing for a while now with Felix, is like when that money pitch comes, when he needs an out or a strikeout, he gets it more often than not. And that's going to be the question with Ty. And he wasn't able to reach back and find whatever that is in the sixth inning yesterday. And it cost him even after the grand slam, like he still should have been able to get through that inning because he had one out and the bases empty. He struck out the next guy. But then he lost
it again.
Yeah,
he was right back on it. Yeah,
yeah, then he lost it again. So I think that entire start is Ty Walker, which is freaking awesome. It's just not necessarily one of the 5 or 10 best pitchers in Major League Baseball.
In the American League.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean.
The ceiling's there. He's definitely.
The ceiling, he shows the ceiling.
Yeah, man, his stuff is just electric this year. Do you guys agree with that? Like,
oh, absolutely.
And the curveball has more bite. He's throwing.
That's where I was going to go. That curveball is unreal.
Yeah, and he's
everything is just it's all tighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
it's just all tighter.
Yep,
I would completely.
And 97 on the fastball. Oof.
Filth. Enjoy it while we can. Seriously, it's fun to watch. He's not going to throw 97 forever.
No.
It'll go down sooner than later, and that's when his control and command is going to be so important. And it looks like until you know what happened yesterday, he's really honed that in just so well. And then that huge stretch last year where he just had unbelievable control. Dude, he's exciting.
He's really fun. And echoing what you just said, Noah Syndergaard got his elbow examined earlier this month. So just enjoy every single damn start. And for that matter, even with what he is now, just give thanks to whatever you choose to give thanks to for Felix.
For Felix.
Yep. And not just for what he is today, but what he's been for the last 10 years. I mean, if the Mariners had been halfway decent, this guy would be an absolute national legend, because what we've had from him for the last 10 years has just been unbelievable. So that's probably a good place to end.
Well, I was going to say, let's one more question from me. Same question that we ended with on last podcast.
Oh, I like it.
So between now and theoretically our next recording, which will be next Wednesday, we will play 5 games. Actually, theoretically, we'll record in the middle of a game against the Orioles or right after.
That's a day game, isn't it?
It's 4:05.
What? The getaway game?
Yeah,
on
Wednesday. Yeah. Mm. It's horrible.
That's a tough schedule. That's a tough stretch of games.
So we'll have the Angels at home for 3, and then we'll have 2 against the Orioles by the time we record
next.
We'll
start recording as soon as that game's over on Wednesday.
Yeah,
so let's say there's 6 in the books.
No, it's 3 5, because we're going till Wednesday, not till Thursday.
Yep.
We have an off day on Monday.
Man. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Fine. Yeah. So where do we hope the Mariners are sitting record-wise?
We have 21 wins right now, right?
Yes. And we have 5 games between now and next.
I'll be happy with 24. It'd be super awesome to have 25.
Yep. That's where I'm at, too. Same answer.
Keep winning series, baby.
Yeah. The Angels should be at least 2 out of 3.
But baseball is baseball. You get 2 out of 3,
of course.
You're happy with that.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, and then the Orioles, man, I'm actually really excited. I'm hoping we're going to publish a little back and forth with Jake Mintz of Cespedes Family Barbecue on Tuesday before the Orioles series, since he's an Orioles fan. That's a fun team. They've got
I'm excited to see
pieces.
our offense in Camden.
Yeah, and then Great American Ballpark against God have mercy
seriously
on their souls.
Bomb squad.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm going to say 24 wins. Anything over that, just gravy, baby.
Agree.
Agree. I got nothing new to add to that.
Sweet. That's going to be a wrap on another episode of Dome and Bedlam. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Scott and David, super grateful for your guys' time. We will see you guys hopefully next Thursday when we publish our next episode. Until then, enjoy the weekend. Get out to Safeco this weekend and fill it up against the Angels. Goms, go Biz. We'll see you next week.